With the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Taylor Hillman.
A Californian has officially taken the helm of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. We'll talk with Parkfield's own Kevin Kester in our top story today. Good morning. It's Friday. Thanks for joining us. We're packing up from our trip visiting the Natural Resources Conservation Service, highlighting some of the stuff they're doing up in the Sonoma County area, so keep an eye out for those stories. And we're gearing up for the World Ag Expo that begins next week. With the recent budget news, it looks like we'll have plenty to talk about with Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue, who will be at the show on Tuesday. Let's get to today's news. Fifth-generation Southern Monterey County rancher Kevin Kester officially stepped into the role of president for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association last week. Kester talked to AgNet West about the five priorities they want to tackle this year: farm bill, trade market access, regulatory reform, antimicrobial use, and fake meats.
That's right, and that's just tip of the iceberg. But those five, there's three ones that we're continuing on, like you were saying, trade and expanding our overseas trade, and then regulatory reform and rollback. We're going to continue working on those, which cover a host of different agencies, and as well as the Farm Bill for 2018 and our priorities there with conservation title, research title, and something new we're asking for is an improved and modernized vaccine bank for foot and mouth disease stored here in the United States. So we really need to improve, update our strains for foot and mouth disease and ample supplies of the vaccine. So when we have an outbreak of foot and mouth disease, the government's in a good position to help protect us.
Kester said having that bank is important when the fifth of your protein is shipped overseas.
No, it wouldn't be as easy, but we need to have at least a fallback to where we have a chance to stop it, because literally almost 20% of our value for every fed animal in this country goes overseas. And so take away 20% of our market overnight, and that's a killer. So we need to be prepared.
We'll hear more from Kester later on in the show. The announcement of a budget agreement included very little information about immigration reform, and what has been discussed hasn't involved agriculture. Gary Crawford talked to the Agriculture Secretary.
Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue was talking with the House Ag Committee, saying so far not much of the immigration debate has touched on the need for a stable workforce on the nation's farms.
I would love to see some sort of transition environment where we could recognize that and move toward a legal workforce.
He said the current H-2A program, which was designed to help farmers get the workers they need, is too complex, doesn't work well. Many farmers have finally just stopped using it.
That only contributes to, the perpetuation of the non-legal workforce that we have in America, and we'd love to see that resolved.
He also said he's been talking with the Department of Homeland Security
and helping them to understand that the criminals they're looking for are not on our farms.
Perdue said there is a shortage of workers for farms in many areas, and as lawmakers work on immigration reform,
that's one of the things we'd like to see addressed.
Again, that was Gary Crawford reporting. Now here's Brian German.
Last week, a significant crowd gathered at Lakeview Farms for the opening celebration of three Kern County dairy biogas projects. California Department of Food and Agriculture Secretary Karen Ross was on hand at the ribbon-cutting and engine-starting ceremony and spoke with AgNet West on how these types of projects are part of a much larger effort.
Governor Brown has made it very clear that natural working landscapes are part of the solution, and that we want to work with farmers and ranchers and the food supply system to green it up and provide those multiple benefits that are possible. So because of establishing the Dairy Digester Research and Development Program, we now have invested close to about $90 million in this technology, and just yesterday we announced alternative manure management grants. We have another round of requests for proposals out. That's for an additional $80 million, and his expenditure plan that was released last Friday proposes another $99 million for this program.
Secretary Ross also commended the dairy families for their early commitment to these types of renewable energy projects.
So we understand this is new technology, and oftentimes there's additional risk, and we want people to step in and be the innovators we know they are and show neighbors how to do this. And it takes early investment and incentive dollars to help share that risk.
The University of California Division of Agriculture and Natural Resources will be at the World Ag Expo demonstrating some of the work of their many researchers and extension specialists. Their exhibition scheduled in three broad areas of some of their research programs. New technologies and innovations will be featured on February 13th, followed by food on February 14th, and finally pests and invasive species on February 15th. UCANR experts will be on hand to discuss a wide range of current topics in agriculture. The use of drones and geospatial tools and technology in agricultural research, management of forest and rangelands, along with community engagement, will be featured topics of discussion. Researchers will also be on hand to discuss automating surface or flood irrigation systems to increase efficiency while also reducing the costs of labor and water. Resources from the UC Statewide Integrated Pest Management Program will also be available. The UCANR tent will be located at Space 37 on I Street, just west of Pavilion A. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
It's very early to know what will happen with farms and farmers in 2018, but USDA has just put out its early farm income forecast for the year. Gary Crawford has more.
The lowest national net cash income in 9 years, the lowest net farm income, which includes capital depreciation and inventory, the lowest in 12 years. That's what Agriculture Department analysts are forecasting for this year. Net cash income expected to drop 5%, down to just under $92 billion.
And net farm income is forecast at $59.5 billion. It's down about 6.7%.
USDA's chief economist, Rob Johansson, he says, for crops, this early forecast has crop cash receipts down for everything except soybeans, receipts for meat animals up a bit, but milk, poultry, and eggs down. Johansson says the problem is that costs of production are likely to rise for most farmers by about 1%. Fuel and fertilizer prices on the increase.
Labor costs are expected to increase. We know that interest rates are going up, so that's another area where we see increasing cost of production.
Also, analysts expect direct government safety net payments to farmers to decline by over 18.5%. Total expected result for farm sector profits.
Certainly moving in the wrong direction.
Again, that was Gary Crawford reporting.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. I'm Taylor Hillman.
The Environmental Protection Agency's action to extend the delay of application for the 2015 Waters of the U.S. rule is a welcome relief to farmers and ranchers. That's according to the American Farm Bureau Federation. AFBF Senior Director of Regulatory Regulations Don Parrish says the move by the EPA is a step forward on water regulation.
We got to hand it to this administration for doing what they need to do to make sure that not just farmers and ranchers, but everyone that uses the landscape can operate with certainty. Even if they operate in multiple states. And this revision to the 2015 rule to extend the applicability date is a step in the right direction.
The extension was needed following a Supreme Court decision defining jurisdiction of the rule to federal district courts, not federal appeals courts, where a nationwide hold on WOTUS was placed. The Supreme Court action nullified the lower court delay.
So this administration scrambled to try to make sure that the 2015 rule never went into effect. And we had more than one court say that this rule was illegal. They wouldn't have put a nationwide stay on it otherwise. So the last thing we want is to see this rule go into effect.
He says the latest EP action allows for a proper evaluation and adjustments to the rule before implementation.
We can all rest assured that whenever something does go into effect, it's going to be protective of the environment, it's going to be protective of business, and hopefully it's going to have the common sense underpinnings that farmers expect from regulations so that we can know when we walk out on our property what is regulated and how to comply with the law.
Well, in today's livestock news, last week during the 2018 Cattle Industry Convention in Phoenix, Arizona, the Beef Checkoff Program's Export Growth Committee got a report from the U.S. Meat Export Federation concerning 2017 beef exports. Joe Sheely has the story.
USMEF President and CEO Dan Hallstrom reports to the committee on strong U.S. beef export results over the past year.
So 2017, our data is only through November, but we got a pretty good idea what December's looking like. Tonnage up 7%, led by Japan, largest value and volume market. Pretty certain we're going to set a new value record, somewhere between $7.2 and $7.3 billion. So what does it really add to you as producers? On a fed cattle basis, $282 per head. Of course, it's no surprise, led by Japan, $75 a head. Korea, 47, Mexico, 38, etc. Now, just give you one example. When was the last time any of you had beef lips? Beef lips are worth over $2 a pound today. Virtually all of them are exported to Mexico. So $2 a pound versus rendered value, $4 a head. This is an example of putting the right cut in the right market to match up with the cultural demand.
While beef exports do face some challenges, Hallstrom says there are also strong tailwinds working in the industry's favor.
Increased production is an opportunity for us to expand our footprint globally. So this is our focus, to try to move a lot of this incremental production. Global economic growth. The world is growing at a pretty good clip, over 3% estimated for 2018. Pretty broad-based growth around the world. The other thing that's kind of flipped is the last 4 or 5 years, we had a really strong U.S. dollar. And in the last 6 months especially, we're starting to see that shift a bit. A little weaker dollar giving us a little bit of help competitively in some of these markets. But the real driver is the global consumption of protein, especially of beef. It's growing around the world, slow but steady, and especially in some of the larger markets in Asia, an opportunity for us, the U.S. beef industry.
For more information, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm Joe Sheely.
Thanks, Joe. And 2017 was a record-breaking year for U.S. red meat exports, with beef export value exceeding $7 billion for only the second time. Pork exports, meanwhile, easily surpassed the previous year's volume record. U.S. Meat Export Federation reports that beef exports at 1.26 million metric tons was up 6% from the year before, the fourth largest volume on record, second largest in the post-BSE or mad cow disease era. Beef export values reached $7.27 billion. That's up 15% year over year, 2% above the previous high achieved back in 2014. Now, pork exports totaled 2.45 million metric tons last year. That broke the 2016 record by 6%. Export value at $6.49 billion was up 9% year over year and the second highest on record, trailing only 2014's record. Pork exports accounted for 26.6% of total production in 2017. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
I recently did an article on Georgia farmers growing citrus fruit. Well, now I have a feature story about growing peaches in Florida. The stories are very similar. The practice is very limited at this time, but it's fairly certain that more Florida farmers are carefully watching this new venture. Although limited in production right now, the crop is doing well. When harvested, it found a ready market. Not your typical peach tree. It's a tree produced for Florida soil and weather. Slightly smaller than its northern counterpart, it's otherwise about the same. Takes a lot of hard work to grow and harvest a crop just like anywhere else. And this is most experimental. It could be the beginning of something big. Florida peaches. We'll just have to wait and see. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Greiner, AgNet West.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. I'm Taylor Hillman. In today's interview segment, we rejoin our interview with new NCBA President Kevin Kester, who's a fifth-generation rancher from southern Monterey County. Kester talked to AgNet West's Gary Cooper about the top priorities during his presidency.
My name is Kevin Kester. I'm 2018 president for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
And just inducted, I think, officially at this meeting, is that correct?
Yes, at the end of this meeting, I am officially, my year's underway.
All right, that's we're here in Phoenix at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association 2018 event, and gosh, great turnout, great fellowship. Region 2 this morning from the southeast, and our other part of our network coverage area was totally packed, and I understand the western region was too.
Boy, I did step into the western region, Region 6 of our organization, and it's by far the biggest. It was a big room, and literally every seat was full. We probably had a couple hundred people in there or more, and so it was a great turnout.
Same on ours, yeah. We had some great youth out here, too, some good youth groups. But NCBA here, you guys have really delved into the priorities for the year, and I guess that gives you your marching orders. And, you know, just farm bill, trade market access, regulatory reform, microbial use, antimicrobial use, and fake meats, the top five targets. You've got your hands full with those five alone.
That's right, and that's just tip of the iceberg. But those five, there's three ones that we're continuing on, like you were saying, the trade and expanding our overseas trade, and then regulatory reform and rollback. We're going to continue working on those, which cover a host of different agencies, and as well as the Farm Bill for 2018 and our priorities there with conservation title, research title, and something new we're asking for is an improved and modernized vaccine bank for foot and mouth disease. stored here in the United States. So we really need to improve, update our strains for foot and mouth disease and ample supplies of the vaccine. So when we have an outbreak of foot and mouth disease, the government's in a good position to help protect us.
You know, let's talk about these a little bit in tandem here. You know, when you talk about trade market access, things like that bank of foot and mouth disease, an important thing to our trade partners. I mean, in France a couple of years ago, they had a short outbreak, and boom, they went to their bank, and within just a few weeks, boom, it was gone, it was cleaned up, and everything was back in business. Kind of amazing, but if, you know, that were to happen here in America, it wouldn't be quite as easy, I don't think.
No, it wouldn't be as easy, but we need to have at least a fallback to where we have a chance to stop it, because literally almost 20% of our value for every fed animal in this country goes overseas. And so take away 20% of our market overnight, and that's a killer. So we need to be prepared.
What are you thinking about the current administration? We've had about a year with the president, some good things, some not so good things, some misunderstandings here and there, but kind of a mixed bag, but all in all, some progress on a lot of fronts.
Yeah, what a difference a year makes. So now I'm happy to say almost everything, with trade maybe being a little bump in the road, that we're still coming to eye to eye on the Trump administration. But overall, things are going very well. We have a very good relationship with the administration inside the White House and agencies. I've seen more of the Secretary of Agriculture in the last year than I did prior administration. And so we have a good relationship all the way from EPA, Department of Interior, USDA, right on down. And so we're very happy about that. And a lot of our issues, the administration's working together. We're trying to find solutions, and things are going well. On trade, NAFTA in particular, we're still working to a solution. And so we want to make sure that the administration doesn't pull the pin on NAFTA and upset the apple cart, because that really would be detrimental to all of agriculture, let alone the beef and cattle industry. So we are working with the president's team, and I think we're going to end up in a good spot.
You know, when I started the interview, I guess I should have mentioned that you hail from California, the home of our AgNet West radio network down in the close to the southern end of Salinas Valley region down there. And you might tell us a little about your ranching operation.
You bet. I'm a fifth-generation rancher from the central coast of California, southern Monterey County, a little ranching community called Parkfield. And so my family's been ranching there in the area since 1867. And happy to say I have a couple of grandchildren now that represent the seventh generation. So I hope we're there for a lot longer.
You know, a lot of people in America and around the world, I've learned, have a lot of misconception about the American cattle industry. You know, the cowboy image around the world carries a lot of clout, a lot of history, but yet people often think we're a corporate industry, and they forget that our average herd size is very, very small. So you might touch on that.
Boy, nothing burns me inside more than to hear this factory farming claims and all those kinds of stuff. The fact is, and these are USDA statistics, on any given year, 95 to 96% of farming and ranching operations are owned or managed by family operations. You know, 9.5 out of 10 operations are truly family owned and managed. So I get really irritated when naysayers try to make claims of factory farming this and corporate farming that. Nothing's farther from the truth.
This goes back to organizations like this, the constant need to keep telling that farm story across the fence, and we in Farm Broadcasting enjoy playing a part of that role. Let's talk a little about the antimicrobial use. Tell us about that issue.
Yes, the last going on 3 years now, NCBA has had a task force, which I've been the chair of, to address. We started off in the feeder sector under some of the non-medically important for human use on some classified ingredients they claim are under classification of antibiotics, but really aren't. They're called ionophores, and they are used to feed cattle, and they're nothing to do with human health whatsoever. So we started to this task force to see what we could do to work with the FDA to see about potential possibilities to remedy that situation. And since then, it's grown to a little bit bigger project to where we're going to address bigger antibiotic use and work with the FDA to maybe come out with some industry recommendations to make sure the public understands that we are very judicious and prudent about any use of antibiotics, and work with the FDA to make sure that in the future regulations that are going to come out of FDA regarding antibiotics, that we're all on the same page.
I want for a cattleman to stay tuned on there. You know, a lot of folks around talking about traceability these days. And when you talk about trade, I'm skipping around a little bit on your list, but that's really an issue tied into trade as well. Around our, you know, world partners want to be able to trace back. A lot of countries are very advancing toward that, and especially people want to accept our products.
Absolutely, that's a big, big, big issue. So here at this meeting in Phoenix, there was actually an independent paper released on traceability as it relates to disease traceability here in the United States. So a very well-written paper, independently written, that kind of gives the pros and cons of traceability, a lot of pros. And so we're going to let industry take that and react to it. And at the same time, the other component of traceability is market access overseas. And you're right. Almost every country overseas requires some sort of traceability element. They all do. Canada, our competitors in Australia and Canada especially, have traceability systems. And so our producers need to start thinking about that aspect also. Personally, I've been doing a source and age verified on my calves for going on 18 years now because I've identified a marketplace overseas that we can get premiums. And so it's been very beneficial for me. And I'd like the other producers, if they want to take part in success stories like that and get a little bit more money for their cattle, that's an opportunity.
We'll conclude Kester's interview after the break.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can always get the latest agriculture news from around the state and the nation at our website, agnetwest.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. I'm Taylor Hillman.
We now conclude our interview with Monterey County rancher Kevin Kester, who's the new president for NCBA. Kester concludes his interview with AgNet West Gary Cooper about traceability and setting up the next generation for success.
Well, you know, when we talk about the size, as we did a moment ago, of the American cattle herd, I think the average is somewhere around 40, 50 head if you take averages nationwide. And a lot of small cattlemen may think it's over their head or too expensive to be involved, but really it's just a matter of buying an ear tag for an extra buck or so, a tag that has that electronic read in it. And when it leaves their ranch, it's somebody else's deal to take care of, right?
Absolutely. And even if you are a small producer with 20, 30, 40, 50 head, you can go to your local marketplace, sales barn, and work with other neighbors to put together a load of cattle. And I'm telling you, for several reasons, for disease traceability, it's important. And there's probably going to be in the future some programs that we're going to be need to go into for that disease traceability. But then on the good side for overseas where we can get those premiums, there are opportunities there where the cost of a tag, you get paid back many, many times over for premiums you could get.
So not only a food safety issue, but a value-added opportunity for Absolutely. The cattle industry. Fake meat. Maybe you better start with a definition on that one.
Well, there is no definition. That's kind of what a term we're using for the time being, what we mean by the fake meat. In the last few months in 2017, there's two startup Silicon Valley companies in California, one trying to do some lab-grown meat, which I call a petri dish meat, and they're trying to grow a commercial product out of that. And what's disturbing, there's been some huge investments. I think Warren Buffett has put some money into it, as well as some American ag companies. And then there's other products that are not meat, but they want to try to develop a product that tastes and looks like meat. And so it's all fake meat. And so we, as an industry, wanted to be proactive and start identifying potential issues. So we want to go to the government and kind of be proactive and see who's going to be the lead on regulating this fake meat products, because we don't want to end up like the milk and dairy industry where there's claims of milk products which aren't really milk, soy, milk, take your pick, there's a list. We don't want to end up there where we lose control of the marketing aspect and false claims.
Now I can tell you stories about orange juice too, and fake orange juice on the shelf that's really sugar water. So it's, I guess, it's getting into the meat industry as well. Well, we've covered the top five issues. What am I not asking that's kind of burning on your mind these days you might want to add for our audience?
You bet. There's a couple of things. So one thing that I am talking about as I travel across the country is the next generations. We need to make sure, guys of my generation, I'm 62 years old, that we do proactive work to create opportunities for the next generations coming behind us so they can be successful at entering ranching or farming, or even the families that are already there to have more opportunities in financing and entry opportunities, mentoring, things like that. We just need to have the conversation and think outside the box and create opportunities for new young people to be a part of the business. As the NCBA officer team, we got an update on some registration statistics this morning, and I'm very happy to say that for the first time in my memory that our average age here at convention actually went down. So you're right, that means there's younger people, and then the young college age segment in that early 20s age, a big increase in numbers here, so that's a great thing.
To get more information on topics you've heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also follow AgNet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgNetWest. Follow Brian German @BrianAgNetWest and Taylor Hillman @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City Newsday by AgNet West.